It's hard to believe we've been doing this for 30 years. I think your involvement's probably been a little bit less, but I went to the very first event, and 30 years has come up very quickly.
Yes, it has. Yes, I've been hanging around since 97, so I was jumping in cars for the first eight, and I've been sitting in this job ever since, pretty much, except for 2013. But yes, the time flies, doesn't it? Time does fly, and here we are, 2022.
Yeah, and of course, being the 30th anniversary, getting underway on Tuesday, it's going back to the old six-day format with the Sunday finish in Hobart, and there's a few new stages as well this year.
Yeah, definitely up on the north northwest coast, so and using parts of roads we have used previously, but sort of a bit of a hybrid, merging them together, using bits of the Ryanna stage to create a new stage at Kamina and another one at Ridgely. So I think one of the things that sort of came out of last year was always trying to mix the course up a little bit to encourage competitors to get out pre-event and check the course properly. So it's a long course and it's quite arduous. So the Northwest is our favourite hunting ground for roads, I suppose. There's so many amazing roads up there to choose from. It gives a bit of variety and we can mix it up and change it around. And then obviously we're going back to Georgetown for the first time in, I think, 4 years now to celebrate the start of the event there, literally on Tuesday.
And when I think back to the 20th anniversary and the 25th anniversary, there were massive fields for that. People seem to like these anniversaries, and this year's no exception because you've got a huge field starting next week as well.
Yeah, look, we're just, we're still hovering around 500 cars. We'll probably fall a little bit short of that, but shouldn't sound too disappointed, should I? The biggest field we've ever had was the 25th at 383. But the big change is, you know, the traditional competitor base, as we all are, getting older and older. So there's less probably returning to this event. And, you know, the COVID impact didn't help by putting this event back a year. But so the competition field, you know, continues to sort of, you know, shrink in all reality as we go through massive generational change around cars. But the touring field and just people just driving around having a good time, which is not a bad thing, and you know, less racing and more just touring around, just continues to grow. In fact, you know, 10 years ago we had 330 cars at the 20th event, which at that point 35 were in the tour. Now we're nearly 500 cars, of which 300 are in the tour. So, you know, it's really been the success story of the last 10 years of Tatago, this organic change away from a motorsport event into a lifestyle event, and that's really what we'll see this year. And I know the traditional punter out on the road doesn't necessarily get too excited about that, but for tourism and, you know, the economic return to Tasmania, great thing with tour people is that they eat out, you know, they eat well every night and they stay in nice hotels and all the rest of it. So the economic return to the state is multiple times what it was 10 years ago.
And look, you mentioned about 300 competitors in the touring side of things, or participants, because they're not competitors, I guess, but that means that there's still 200-odd that are involved in the motorsport side of things. I noticed during the week you put out a press release to sort of reinforce the fact that motorsport remains at the heart of Tiger Tasmania.
Sure. Yeah, and 200 cars competing is no slouch, right? But, you know, we'll never see the glory days of Tiger Tasmania where you had 300 cars literally racing in the event. Those days are gone. But, you know, 200 by today's standards still makes it sort of double the size of any other motorsport rally on the planet, really. So, yeah, it's still great. And all the great teams that we, you know, and we are, you know, celebrating the Whites and their success in particular this 30th event. You know, they've had an incredible, we're really focusing on the last 15 years of Targa, and, you know, they have totally dominated that period of time and gone through a number of regulations changes and car changes to stay ahead of the pack. And, you know, this year they're going to their eighth win, which would equal the great Jim Richards and Barry Oliver. And, you know, they're local Tasmanians, and that's, you know, again, what a fantastic story. You know, we all know John's businesses, and particularly Delta Hydraulics, and being in Devonport, and, you know, they're great contributors to the economy themselves. And so we felt it was important to really celebrate, you know, their success over the last 15 years, which you'll see a heavy focus on that this week.
You mentioned Jason and John White, of course. They'll be in the Viper, and the reigning champions, Eddie Maguire and Zach Brakey from the Burnie area. Eddie lives at a little hamlet called Elliot. A lot of people haven't heard of that one. But just on the pointy end of the field, who are the ones to look out for this year? Obviously the Whites and Eddie and Zach, but who else?
Look, definitely the Vipers are the ones to beat. I mean, Mike Pritchard's coming in a new Ultima, and that is a, you know, great bit of kit. You've got Angus Kennard and the GDR, but the rule changes that have come on the back of the sad fatalities last year, in particular the speed limit, bringing the field back so they can't go any faster than 200, and the addition of four extra tyres this year, which has really been the only Viper's only weakness has been its tyres. And under the new rules, that weakness is now gone. I think most pundits would be saying they'll be harder to beat than ever. And as long as they keep the cars running, Eddie and Jason will be the benchmark all week, even if it rains, and they'll be very, very hard to beat on this course.
I'd imagine with the speed limit that the cars will be fitted with some sort of electronic speed limiter. So how will that work on stages where we've seen in the past, a base time that they have to meet?
Yeah, so we've gone to an elapsed time. So we've moved away from base times as part of all these changes. The other big change is we've gone from 12 speed zones to 33 speed zones on the course, and that is to protect crests and dips, and in particular crests, so that no car can ever leave the ground at any point in time. So anywhere where there is a crest now has a speed zone which will slow the cars down to less than 80 kilometres an hour as a safety initiative. And so, the 200k speed limit is to be managed by the competitor. The Porsches and that come with electronic limiters fitted to their cars, but not every car has them. Some have, hurriedly fitting limiters at the last minute, but ultimately it's the responsibility of the competitor to stay under that limit, and there's very heavy penalties if they go over it.
Okay, now you're starting on Tuesday. You mentioned the traditional stage at Georgetown returning. The finish will be at Princess Wharf in Hobart on Sunday rather than Saturday, and I know that there's no stages south of Hobart this year, and obviously, understandable, there's an inquest that has to be held in regard to at least one of those stages. So what's happening on day five and six then?
Well, day five is looping out of Strawn back up to, the northwest coast, as it turns out. Again, that's where the best roads are. The removal of Hobart at the end was really, whilst people are connected to what happened last year, but the reality of it is, with Anzac Day being Monday, that was the key driver to start Tuesday. We would have started Monday, but we're, personally, great respect for our Anzacs, as we all should have, and we should never close roads on that day. When people need to get to Anzac Day services and all the rest of it, we just cannot create inconvenience. So that drove a Tuesday start, which then meant we had to finish Sunday, which just meant something had to give, which was the Hobart lead. It does give us a little bit of time to look at all those stages down south, but that was the key driver. And day six, we'll still get Molesworth and Grasstree Hill in there to give our southern fans something to look forward to. And then a massive night at Princess Wharf, one on the Sunday night.
Okay, now all the information's on the website. I had a look at it yesterday, and I found it a little bit hard to find the course, but how do people find the information on Targa this year? There's normally a spectator's guide, isn't there?
Yeah, there is a spectator's guide on there. You just need to drop down off that first screen. You'll see an arrow at the bottom of the screen. If you go down to the bottom there, you'll still see that. There's a spectator guide there, and a road closure document's probably the key one, and they're side by side. So we've got them pretty prominent, but you just do need to scroll down off that very first screen you see at the top, and if you just click on that button, it'll take you down to like a second screen there, and people can get all the information there. There's contact numbers there if you want road closure information, and updates around that. Obviously things do change, and I'll be doing radio every morning just to give everyone those updates throughout the week, and just give us a call if you need to know anything. We're here to help and try and reduce the amount of inconvenience that is caused by our road closure.
Yeah, it's worth a lot of money to the state, and of course it shines a spotlight on Tasmania, as we know. Mark, thanks very much for your time this morning. Have a great week next week, and we'll catch up with you soon.
Thanks, Martin. Thanks for your time too.